Okay, any questions?
So let me remind you what our big plan is. The big plan is to take elliptically fibered Calabi-Yau manifolds. And understand good birational models for these guys. So that means I'm going to want some kind of reasonable birational model X bar over B bar. We'll have to say later what that means. We're also going to want birational models for the Jacobian fibrations, which typically the good birational models that we might want there are over slightly different bases than the original ones. And the Jacobian vibrations always are related to a virus stress vibration. So we're going to want to understand virus stress vibrations and how virus stress vibrations get resolved. So I think this is a slight change in notation from last time, but I got an actual virus stress vibration. I'll explain what that is in a minute. And then I'm going to have a way of resolving the virus stress vibration. So part of the one of the tools here is the sort of modern theory of birational geometry, birational geometry and the minimal model program, and it extends some basic facts about birational geometry from dimension 2 to higher dimension. And so what happens in birational geometry? In birational geometry, you might start with some variety like B, and you might decide for whatever reason to blow up a point on B, and maybe blow up another point on B, and blow up another point on B. Various reasons that you might be blowing up points or higher dimensional subvarieties, for that matter, on B. And then you would like to know, can you reverse this process and kind of get back down to the starting point or to something that's known as a minimal model. So the minimal model is supposed to satisfy, under good circumstances, that the intersection number of the canonical bundle of the minimal model with the curve is greater than or equal to, with any curve on the space, is greater than or equal to zero. That's kind of an intrinsic characterization of minimal model. And well, I'll explain in the context over here why we might need to not just start with a minimal model, but arrive at a minimal model after some process. So we'll start with some X over B. We'll do some blow-ups to it in order to guarantee that it has some nice properties. And then we'll try to blow back down using this minimal model program to obtain the models that we're really interested in. And then one of the detailed things later on is going to be to figure out, given the Jacobian, how to determine what are all the possible X bars that are associated to that Jacobian. So that addresses the question that I was discussing a lot last time. So I could do a minimal model program for X, or I could do one for B. So same story for X. You might have blown up X somehow, and then you'd kind of like to get back down to a situation where kx dot c is greater than or equal to zero. And the context of this elliptic vibration, a vibration by genus 1 curves, under suitable circumstances, we're going to have a formula which tells us that the canonical bundle of the total space is a pullback from the base. It's the canonical bundle of the base, but plus some divisor. So I'm going to call it lambda. It's going to be a divisor, actually, with Q coefficients. So there's some technical things having to do with the coefficients. And what you can imagine is that if you're in the situation where you've got the divisor, the canonical bundle on the base, and the canonical bundle on the total space related in this way, well, doing the minimal model program on the total space means looking for curve C such that kx.c is negative, and then trying to blow down. And there's a variant of the minimal model program in which you get to put in an extra divisor, and so we're going to use the one that's related to this canonical bundle formula. And in the variant of the canonical bundle formula, you'd be looking for curves C on the base such that KB plus lambda dot C is negative. So as long as these minimal model theories match up in some appropriate sense, we will be able to actually run this minimal model program idea and get down to some kind of minimal model. Now, one of the interesting features of this story is that for minimal models in dimension 3 and above, the minimal model might be singular. So certain mild singularities are required for minimal models. But another interesting feature of this story is that if J of X tilde is non-singular, then typically there aren't any interesting X bars. So it's the very fact that the minimal model program applied to the Jacobian will produce models that have singularities that actually gives us the flexibility to find these Calabi-Yau torsors, these elliptic Calabi-Yau torsors that we're eventually after. So it might look a little technical that we got into these singularities, but they're actually a really important ingredient for this story.
Wait, real quick, what's C again?
C is a random curve. So this is the condition to achieve a minimal model, and in the process of trying to find one, I'll look for curves on my x which kx.c negative, and then I'll try to contract
and
those
you just
curves.
Need one.
I just need, well, to make the minimal model program go, you need to analyze the set of all such curves.
Okay.
And the key thing here is going to be to kind of match the curves that are showing up for the problem for x and for the problem for kb plus lambda.
So you know you arrived at one when it's true for all curves?
So once I've arrived at a minimal model, if I don't have, if k.c is greater than or equal to 0 for all curves.
For all,
right,
okay.
Right,
okay.
Which is, so if I find ones that have negative intersection number, I'll be trying to blow those down.
Okay.
So let me just mention that the two key properties that we're going to need to start out with, the key starting properties, that we will use, first of all, we'll use X to be is a flat family. And the key point is that all fibers have all fibers pi inverse B have dimension 1. So to start with an arbitrary family, that might not be true. And one of the key steps is that you can blow up the base and the total space in such a way that it becomes flat. So that's an important property. And then another important property just for getting started is that the set of singular fibers delta in B. So that just means all of the points in B such that the inverse image is singular. That set of singular fibers as a starting point is a divisor with normal crossings. And what that means is that you can write delta as a sum of delta j's, and then each point p lives in some finite collection, lives in some intersection of j in j of p delta j. And these intersections, delta J1 through delta JK, meet, that can be an empty intersection, by the way, meet normally. So there are analytic coordinates, can't say for algebraic coordinates, analytic coordinates such that zj equals 0 defines delta j. In local analytic coordinates. So near P, there are local analytic coordinates with this property. That's what I'm trying to say. So that's a slightly technical looking condition. It's one which can always be achieved by blowing up. So actually, I could start, if that were my main concern, I could start with that condition of wanting the set of singular fibers to be a divisor with normal crossings, do a bunch of blow-ups in the base, and I would achieve that. Now, in so doing, because of the canonical bundle formula, I typically would lose the Calabi-Yau property of the total space. So we're going to just ignore that property for most of the discussion until we've used the minimal model program to get back down to a minimal model, and then the Calabi-Yau property will kind of kick in again. So showing... Flatness, there are two different arguments for that we'll get to eventually. It's a standard fact in birational geometry that you can blow up along intersections of components of a divisor on a variety to eventually achieve normal crossings if you blow up enough. And that's another technical convenience for getting things started. And the third technical convenience, I have to define it, but the J invariant of the elliptic vibration is well defined. And we'll see in a minute what that means. And again, that can be achieved by blowing up. So these properties except for the first one. The first one we're going to keep as best we can to always work with flat families. But the fact that the set of singular fibers would be divisor with normal crossings, that's very highly unrealistic for actual Calabi-Yau threefolds that you see in nature, doesn't happen. And the J invariant typically is not well-defined. So those are convenient starting points, but then we lose those properties when we blow back down and start invoking the minimal model program.
I'm sorry, what was the first of those properties? The
first property is a flat family. Well, the J invariant, generally the J invariant is going to be defined by a rational map to P1. And I just want to resolve so that becomes a regular map to P1. But it will vary over the family. So today's task to get started with, particularly with some of the showing that you have flat families of particular kinds, I'm actually going to run through the Kodaira classification. And it's Tate variant. And we'll see how to resolve singularities. In codimension 1 on the base. So Kodaira's original work was about elliptic families, x to b, where the dimension of x is equal to 2, the dimension of b is equal to 1, I will assume that B is a small neighborhood of some point in it. I'm going to assume that X is smooth. And the version of the minimal model program, which Kodaira assumes from the beginning, which is relevant for algebraic surfaces, is that X does not contain any curve C with the property that, the only ones I care about are ones where pi of C is a point, but the key property is that the self-intersection is minus 1, and the canonical bundle of x dot of a c is equal to minus 1. So if you have any such curve c, any c could be blown down to a non-singular point. And that's the surface version of the whole minimal model story. So if you saw such a curve in a fiber, it would mean that the fiber had been accidentally blown down, blown up too much. So this is called the Casanova criterion for exceptional curves of the first kind. That's the classical language for this stuff. And so Godard then went through and classified the possibilities for pi inverse of b. So pi inverse of b is in some nice list. And the things in the list all have the property that pi inverse of b can be written as a union of a bunch of curves. Maybe I'm going to call them EJ. What's true is that if pi inverse of b has at least two components, then each of the EJ squared, each of the EJ has self-intersection minus 2, and the EJs together, in the case of at least two components, the set of EJs forms the combinatorial structure known as an affine Dinka diagram. So I'll draw these in a few minutes, but this is just the basic structure. And one of the interesting features on Godard's list is that there's a possibility of a multiplicity for the fiber. So pi inverse b can have multiplicity m. And Godard had a bunch of notation for this stuff, which I will reproduce in a few minutes, but the only kinds with multiplicity were called min and mi0. And aside from that, there's no decoration to the right of the letter in the Godard form. So this was a purely combinatorial analysis based on this condition of what sorts of ways could a genus one curve degenerate in a one parameter algebraic family. And he produced this interesting combinatorics related to affine Dinka diagrams, together with a specific list of what all the fibers look like. So I'm about to do this in the specific context of a Weierstrass model, where we have something called Tate's algorithm, which helps to determine the Kodaira type. And these two cases do not occur in the Weierstrass context, but aside from that, the list is complete, and so we'll see the whole list as I get through the Tate algorithm version. So that was kind of abstract. I took an abstract one-parameter family of elliptic curves degenerating in some way at a particular point and kind of analyzed what might happen at that point. The Weierstrass model point of view you run through this little analysis of a generic genus 1 curve, and I'm going to take a genus 1 curve with a point which is otherwise known as a section or a rational section of the fibration. And then I use the global sections of multiples of that section, sigma of b, to generate an equation describing some birational model of the curve, typically with singularities. In fact, there's a way of describing intrinsically what you get, which is that all components of fibers which don't meet the section get contracted to points. So that's kind of the slogan. All components of fibers of pi which do not meet the section, do not meet sigma of b, are contracted to points. And there's a general form of the equation, a sort of affine form of the equation, where intrinsically f and g are sections of appropriate bundles, line bundles, on the base B. So this is some line bundle to the fourth. G is a section of some line bundle to the sixth. that line bundle actually determines the canonical bundle of the total space, so that if you're interested in producing Calabi-Yau models, your line bundle is restricted, but the construction is general. To produce this kind of family of elliptic curves with f and g varying, and the way to think of that variation globally is to think of f and g as appropriate sections of line bundles. By the way, then x and y should be thought of as variable sections of line bundles L to the tensor 2 and L to the tensor 3, and this somehow lives inside of some kind of here's a use for relative spec. Some kind of relative spec of the structure sheet plus L to the plus to the tensor 2 plus L to the tensor 3. So that's intrinsically what we're doing. And I'm going to have occasion to use a slightly more general form of the equation as we go along. So this form of the equation is determined completely up to a kind of scaling where I'm allowed to multiply f by a fourth power and g by a sixth power of something which is invertible. So if I have an invertible function, I can do that. The other form is not so intrinsic. It involves arbitrary choices. So in the other form, I'm going to write y squared is x cubed plus ux squared plus vx plus w. And now u is going to be a section of L to the tensor 2. V is going to be a section of L to the tensor 4. And w is going to be a section of L to the tensor 6. But as we'll see, as we go through the analysis, we'll be able to make these choices so that u, v, or w vanish to certain orders along some curve on the base. And those vanishings will help us see where we are in analyzing the general form of this Weierstrass model. So I should point out over here that the discriminant that I described before is given by 4f cubed plus 27g squared equals 0. And by the way, my requirement that I wanted to make that normal crossings is pretty much at odds with the formula. If you look at that formula, f and g are pretty arbitrary sections of bundles, so they'll have zeros in pretty arbitrary looking places. But now I've taken this funny combination of the cube of one plus the square of the other. So the typical behavior of the discriminant locus has one of these cusp-like singularities where f and g simultaneously vanish. And that doesn't have normal crossings at all. So if you're really using that normal crossings approach, then the very first thing you're going to do is destroy whatever structure you had in order to produce that normal crossings business. And then later, the minimal model program will be restoring that. So it's a trade-off we have to have because we don't have other techniques at the moment for guaranteeing the existence of the right thing. And here I have an analogous formula for the discriminant, 4u cubed w minus u squared v squared minus 18uvw plus 27 W squared plus 4 V cubed equals 0. So there was a lot more flexibility, a more complicated formula. I think we will use the full power of that formula once or twice in this analysis. So what we're going to do is select a curve, C and B, such that C is a component of delta. And we want to analyze x near C at a generic point of C. And again, I'm going to use local analytic coordinates. So in local analytic coordinates, I represent C as being the vanishing of some z, z equals 0. And I want to see where I can get. So well, I said I wanted C to be a component of delta. Actually, the first case, so case one, I should have said C is not a component of delta. And that means x is smooth near C, and the fibers are non-singular. And I'm going to make a table over here. Godard's notation is I sub 0. And the order of vanishing along C of delta is 0. Later, we're going to try to characterize things in terms of orders of vanishing of F and G, but they're not relevant for this particular case. And if I were to draw a picture of the Knauer fiber, I would just have had a non-singular elliptic curve in this particular case. Now, not showing up in the Weierstrass analysis, as I already mentioned, is the variation of the variant of this. In the variant, well, I don't really have my Weierstrass information anyway, and I have multiplicity m fiber, and the way you build one of these things is you take a nice multiplicity M fiber with a section, and then you mod out by an action of a cyclic group of order M, which acts by translation by a point of order M along the fiber, and also acts by multiplication by a root of unity along the base. And so that turns out to have no fixed points whatsoever, and it creates a fiber that has intrinsic multiplicity M. In the story. Okay, so that's case one. Case two, we will assume that z equals 0 is contained in the discriminant locus. What we may assume, if we are working in a small enough neighborhood, is that z actually divides the discriminant. So what did it mean, by the way, that this was the discriminant? I should have derived this here. What I'm looking at is the fiber. So the fiber is being described as a cubic curve. It's a double cover of the line branched in four points, one of which is at infinity, as well as the three visible roots here. And if you're going to get singularity in the fiber, singularity in the fiber will correspond to two or more of the roots of this cubic coming together, right? If the roots of the cubic stay distinct and finite, then there's no problem. I get a non-singular elliptic curve by the double cover branch on those four points. But if two or three of them come together, then I'll have some kind of singular fiber in the story. And so what's really being calculated here is the discriminant of this cubic polynomial. When does it have multiple roots? And that, hopefully everybody knows, happens exactly if the derivative and it share a common zero, So the quick derivation is that you had x cubed plus fx plus g, you had the derivative 3x squared plus f, and for them to share a common zero, I should make a little maneuver in the ideal. This minus a third x times this gives me something like 2/3 fx plus g, so x has to be minus g, minus 3g over 2f, something like that, and then 3x squared plus x also has to vanish, so if I take 3x squared, that looks like 27g squared over 4 f squared, and that has to be minus f. And so if you plug that in, you end up with this formula. There's a sign wrong. I do something wrong with a sign. But aside from that, I get this formula for the cubics coming together. All right. So I'm assuming that whatever expression I have is divisible by z. And what it means is that there was some point on the fiber where two or three of the roots came together, which was a singular point. And by translating x, x goes to x plus a, which is essentially what I did by the additional degree of freedom I have in allowing for these equations. Because if I take one of those and translate x, I don't necessarily have, I'm no longer missing the x squared term, right? So I translate x, and I can put the singular fiber at the origin. So so now I have some equation of this form. And at the origin means that x equals y equals 0. So to have a singular fiber at the origin means that z is going to divide w. But the fiber had also better be singular, so there ought to not be a linear term in x along z equals 0 either. So z also has to divide v. Okay, so saying that I had a singularity says that I can make a change of coordinates so that z divides v and z divides w. And then if I've made that assumption, then the Kedira type I sub n turns out to be the condition that if z divides v and z divides w, then z does not divide u. So I'll explain that in a minute, and then the n turns out to be the order of vanishing here, and these turn out to be zero. And I'll draw the picture in a couple minutes. So Kedira type IN corresponds to z not dividing u. That's just a definition. Kedira type is a label that explains where we got into this algorithm. So it explains what kind of central fiber I'm getting over the origin, and it's a label. I sub n is one of the labels for Kedira type. And I guess I will stop withholding information and tell you that here you end up with a chain consisting of n rational curves, where n e's with ej squared is minus 2, and ej dot ej plus 1 is equal to 1. That's the essential data for the Kedira type. So where is that data here? Well, I haven't told you how to get to order n vanishing. I simply told you that whatever the order of vanishing of delta was, we were going to end up with something of the appropriate type. And so let me just tell you roughly, I don't think we want to go through on the board every detail of this Tate algorithm business, but let me tell you now roughly that under the circumstances, if the order along C of the discriminant is n, then you can essentially write this in the form y squared equals x cubed plus ux squared plus v some n times z to the n x plus, that's n over, that's greatest integer in n over 2, plus z to the n wn, something of that sort. And so the n lets you the n determines the type of singularity that you're seeing on the surface. So if you have studied surface singularities, the key terms here are y squared. There's a non-vanishing term times an x squared, and then a z to the n. And this is called an an minus 1 singularity. And when you resolve the singularity, we'll do a bit of the resolution in a second. When you resolve the singularity, you end up with n minus 1 rational curves. And that's almost the same thing as I had written over here, except that here I'm completing it to a cycle with an nth curve, and that nth curve is the central fiber that we started out with. So this is one of Kodaira's big cases where an arbitrary order of vanishing along delta is a priori possible, and it shows up in this type of singularity. So what does it mean that I have a singularity like that? The typical thing that you do is you blow up the singularity. So now I'm resolving the singularity in the total space, and this is effectively what I'm going to end up doing for the Kodaira classification, is explaining how the singularity in the total space gets resolved generically for the Kodaira classification. And I've got my two quadratic terms and my higher order term. I make a change of variables in which when you study it, you end up with a new equation. So you end up creating, you do a blowing up, and that blowing up creates a pair of rational curves, and then a new singularity at the intersection of those rational curves, which has this form in which n has been dropped by 2. So if I do that successively, well, if n was equal to if n was equal to 1 to begin with, then I shouldn't have blown up. But if I do that successively, then I'll create a total chain of n minus 1 components in this way, which are which were gotten sort of 2 at a time, except possibly at the very end, where if n was odd, I just had 1 component left over. Okay, so I blow up the singularity and I create the resolutions of singularities in that way. And there's one key aspect of this which Tate's analysis contributes to the story, which Kodaira's original analysis was ignoring, and that is the role of this function u on the base. So if the base is dimension at least 2, There could be interesting things happening with that U, which is itself a function on the base. Namely, if you want to ask the question, do I have, so I should point out that the pair of rational curves are being collectively defined by an equation that looks like that. That's the leading order term of the equation. And one interesting question is whether that pair of rational curves is actually two rational curves or a sort of pair that's linked together. And if U has a square root, then I can factor this guy, if I subtract from the other side, y bar minus root u times x bar, y bar minus root u, plus root u times x bar, and then I will have individually defined rational curves. But if u does not have a square root, those two rational curves are not individually defined, and in fact, globally on the base, they may not be separable, right? It may be that that square root function doesn't exist, and although I'm seeing a rational curve in one particular fiber, if I were to wander around on the base, maybe those two rational curves would get exchanged with each other. And that phenomenon, which is important for the applications to number theory, which is why Tate was careful with it, also shows up for elliptic vibrations in dimension beyond 2. So there's this kind of key question here, which is U a square? And actually, there's an intrinsic way of saying what U is. When I made the, when I made the shift, well, anyway, if I take minus 9g over 2f squared or something like that, that turns out to be intrinsically over 2f. That turns out to be intrinsically u. So from the original Weierstrass ingredients g and f, you can simply ask the question, is u restricted to c a square? You can ask whether that ratio restricted to c is a square or not, and get two different answers about whether the curves in the isodan, the Kadara isodan fiber, are individually defined or only defined in pairs. And there are places in the physics literature where those two alternatives are denoted by stable and non-stable. So stable means U is a square, and non-stable means U is not a square. And if U is not a square, the curves are not individually defined. Okay, that was case two. In case three, I assume that Z divides U. So Z divides V, Z divides W, and Z divides U. And it turns out that we should return to the original Y squared equals X cubed plus FX plus G in that case, because what this really means is that Z divides F and Z divides G. And so, what does the structure look like? It looks like y squared equals x cubed plus z f1x plus z g1. And if you look at that at z equals 0, it has a nice cusp singularity, but the total space is non-singular. So that's another one of the things on Kadara's list. Oh, I should have mentioned that this is where the other variant was. That there was the M I sub N. It's also possible for a multiplicity to occur there, and that's the only other one where we don't see it directly from this Tate story. But now I have Kadara type 2, so the order of vanishing here was 2. Order of vanishing here was 1 and 1. And in fact, if you look at it, here the order of vanishing is exactly one, and here we might have a higher order of vanishing by accident without affecting the story. And now we actually run through various possibilities for how many times Z divides F or G. So the reason that one is important here is that, so I'll remind you that the discriminant is 4FQ plus 27G squared. So if G vanishes to order once and F vanishes to order at least once, then that is exactly 2 here. But if you want to go to order 3 here, then you need G vanishing to at least twice and F vanishing at least exactly one time. Right. So the next one along the line, I'm going to put 2 more along the line, 3 and 4. 3 has order 3. This is order exactly 1, and this is at least 2. And then 4, this is exactly 2, and this is at least 2. And if I draw the corresponding, if I take the corresponding equations, here I've generated a simple A1 singularity. And it turns out that when you resolve the A1 singularity, you end up with two components which are tangent to each other in that way. And here, this is, these are types 2, 3, and 4. Here, order of vanishing at least 2 here, and 2 here. I've generated an A2 singularity. The A2 singularity resolves to a pair of curves which meets the third curve. So this is the third one with the section. And the pair of curves has that same question, that same ambiguity question that we had show up with the U a few minutes ago. And the question is, is G over Z squared a square, restricted to C a square? And again, that divides into two types, determining whether the pair of curves that you generate by the blow-up here are individually well-defined or not. Okay, trying to label the cases. This is the standard way of labeling cases. So so this was called case 4. It's called case 5, case 4, and case 3, according to the case labeling.
What is the label to the right of the diagram at the bottom next to A2?
The label to the right of the bottom. Here I've drawn the picture, which is the three components.
Right.
I wrote the word third. It's the third curve. It's the one that was the actual fiber. And then there are the two that might be... might be switched by the monodromy business. And here I should have continued to draw, but I had M times my cycle, and then here I had the cusp and the pair of curves and the three curves. Okay, so case 6, we have z squared dividing f, z cubed dividing g, and there turns out to be a whole interesting branch having to do with, the order of vanishing of delta. So I've got order 6 the cube here and a squared there both contribute 6, and I'll call this n plus 6. And those turn out to define a whole class called the Godira types IN star. And they're associated to the singularity that they're associated to is a D n plus 4 singularity. And I'm, you know, I don't have a lot of time, so I'm not going to sort of drag us through that branch. But the final branches, we go back to, and so for these, we again make a change of coordinates to put the central fiber, the singular point at the origin in x and y space, and then look at the orders of things. And there's also some condition about some monodromy thing, which is going on in that case. I'm not going to run through those cases, but I will do the final ones, which are presumably something like 8, 9, and 10. If I remember the labeling correctly. Single branch, case 7, case 8. Okay.
That was case 6 that we just did?
This was case 6 and 7, which we didn't just do, and case 8, which I'll start up with again. I've got z cubed divide f, and z to the fourth divides g. So the ones that I just skipped are the ones called IN stars. They have order n plus 6. Here I have order 2 and 3. There's a complicated question about something being a square, and then the picture is an affine DN Dinka diagram, which looks like that. And then the last ones are 4 star, 3 star, and 2 star. They have orders 8, 9, and 10. Let's see, 8 would be 4 and at least 5. That's cute. That's not right. At least 3. This would be 4. No, this would be 3 and at least 5. And this would be exactly 5 and at least 4. And the pictures in these cases are E6 tilde, E7 tilde, and E8 tilde. If you don't know the story about rational bubble points and simply laced Dinka diagrams, not really time for that today, but this whole class of singularities D, N plus 4, together with the E6, E7, and E8 are the last of such singularities that you get, and the resolutions are connected to a Dinka diagram for a simply laced Lie with the same name. Okay, so this actually, I kind of stopped doing it in the middle, and I do apologize for that. You can find the version that I was just describing summarized in Appendix B. Not just summarized, done in full sketch detail in Appendix B of I just have numbers 1109-0042. But you can also find it in this paper of tape from the 70s. Just in slightly less geometric form. So what I stopped doing so explicitly after I got here was to show the blow-ups and explain how we got the blow-ups. But in each case, the blow-up is very explicit, and you have like these step-by-step ones where I got down to the A family. Similar thing happens for the D family. You could do the blow-ups step-by-step and see everything that was created during a blowing up. So the place where we're going to use that next time is in describing what happens in codimension 2. So in codimension 2, to get started, we want to produce blow-ups which have non-singular total spaces and flat families, and we'll use the fact that there is this explicit algorithm which works from the Kodaira starting point to do that, and we'll follow a strategy introduced by Miranda in the 1980s to produce this flat family. And then later, we'll have to be blowing back down because the flat family itself is not it's not the only property that we need, but we have enough kind of explicit stuff with blowing up that we got here. All right, I got through that in an hour, which is pretty good. Hopefully I didn't lose people too much. And next week I will continue. Questions?
Is there a resource you recommend for looking at this?
Is there any? I didn't hear
a resource you recommend for looking at the Miranda strategy?
So there's a paper of Miranda. The paper of Miranda is not easy to obtain, but
not on that side.
The problem is that it's published in. You know, I didn't think it was going to be an obscure volume. We actually shopped around at the time. I was the editor of the volume. I was a young guy. We shopped around looking for which publisher was likely to have better distribution so people would have it. And it turns out we picked the one that never went online. So so in a modern era, the papers are really hard to get to. We've got to do something about that. We tried to get 10 years ago. We tried to get the publisher to give the copyright back to us, and they wouldn't do it. I think
will they make an exception to allow posting?
I think we're going to try again. Other questions?
So, what is the sort of odds of succeeding in the sort of bigger long-term goal for this?
The long-term goal? You mean the big goal of figuring out the elliptic clavier torsors? The odds of succeeding are extremely high. I and maybe some of you in concert will work at this problem until it's finished because it's important to solve. I don't see any inherent obstruction, but it hasn't been done. All right, enjoy your long weekend.